You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest on this hour is Anne Hoover. Anne, it's good to have you here this morning.
Thank you, Eric.
So the way the show starts is with a huge question that you can take in a number of ways. Who are you? What do we need to know about the values you aspire to live, the places, things you've done, the labels you wear to start this conversation? Who are you?
That is a big question. Of course, I think we're many people.
Yeah.
You know,
there's a multitude in each of us. Yes,
that's right. And but I think it begins with relationship. You know, who we are, who I am.
Mm-hmm.
I aspire to have I long to have a relationship with my Creator, with God,
mm-hmm.
and I seek to make that stronger every day. Mm-hmm. So that's really important to me. But I think my relationship with, I mean, I'm a mother of five children, and that's a very important relationship.
Sure.
I'm a wife to a wonderful husband, and that's a very important and essential relationship in my life.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, of course, I'm a daughter, and I'm a grandmother, and to four really beautiful grandchildren now. And, you know, so all those relationships are really important. And, of course, I'm a neighbor and a friend, And those relationships, I think, are also help us to expand and mm-hmm, and to be who we are. And so,
so you're not afraid of the pulls of the world in the relationships. In fact, you kind of enjoy that.
I do. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And I think we have something to learn from each of those relationships, mm-hmm. and that is kind of where I think, you know, relationships kind of start in the family, and we expand from there, and that family is the school of love, mm-hmm, and then we mm-hmm. learn to love beyond our core family and grow on mm-hmm. out to society in a larger way.
Right, and what's interesting is that I think experientially our conscious awareness starts, as you said, with the family. But it's interesting that when you started defining yourself, you started to find yourself first in your relationship to God. And many people who are religious on the show, many different traditions, they don't necessarily start there. And so by your centering it there, what is that about perspective taking on who you are?
Well, it has become a big part of my life. I think probably one of the earliest memories I have was with my father taking me across the road to a cornfield from where we lived, and in a rural community in central Illinois, and looking at the rainbow and hearing the story of Noah and the Ark.
Uh-huh.
And that made such a, I was probably 3 years old or something like that, and made such a deep impression on me. And I've always, it was a pivotal moment in my young life.
You
and
experienced enchantment.
I did, and that awe of God. And, even though I've been agnostic at various points in my life,
right.
and I've questioned God for sure over many times. I come back to recognizing that mm-hmm. that is the core relationship in my life.
So you brought music with you. Shall we start with the John Denver piece, Annie's song?
Sure.
Or would you rather start with the Appalachia, one of the Appalachian pieces?
Let's start with the John Denver song.
Okay, here we go.
You fill up my senses like a night in a forest, like the mountains in springtime, like a walk in the rain, like a storm in the desert, like a sleepy blue ocean. You fill up my senses, come fill me again. Come let me love you, let me give my life to you, let me drown in your laughter, let me die in your arms, let me lay down beside you, let me always be with you. Come, let me love you. Come, love me. Like the mountains in springtime, like a walk in the rain, like a storm in the desert, like a sleepy blue ocean. You fill up my senses, come fill me.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest on this hour is Anne Hoover. So, Anne, given the life that you value now, what were some of the experiences that you've needed to have and to learn from so that you can live that life as well as possible now?
Well, again, it's a whole lifetime of experiences, but probably the attending a Lutheran church as I was growing up, mm-hmm. and being active in that. I remember a pastor at one time when I was serving him a cup of coffee at a youth meeting or something, and he thanked me and said, "Oh, you have a lovely smile. Make sure you always use that for God and for good." And, you know, that's another one of those moments that mm-hmm. it really planted a seed, you know, mm-hmm. of like, yes, that's true. I need to always be using the gifts I have for something that's good.
Right. And even if you doubt the existence of God, it can still be good.
Well, of course.
Which is an interesting way. You took it as a blessing. And you could have just ignored it.
That's true. Yeah. And I might have at some point. But, but anyway, of course, through college, I had lots of doubts, and I went through a whole lot of things. But when I was, I guess I need to say that one of the important identifications that I have in my life is nature, mm-hmm. and my love for the environment and the beauty that's around me and around all of us. And that's one reason I live in Ithaca, is because of the waterfalls and the beauty here. But I got very interested in outdoor activity, and I studied outdoor education and recreation when I was in college. And I ended up, after graduating, going to an Outward Bound course high in the Rockies. And at that time, the leader of our group, our little group, seemed to have the ideal job I was looking at jobs at that point. I was trying to figure out where I was going from there. And I thought, oh, this is what I want to do, this kind of work. And then I realized that he really wasn't a happy person. He was getting a divorce from his wife, and he was in the midst, even though he was doing these wonderful things, that he wasn't happy. And you know, in Outward Bound, you go on a 3-day solo, and even though it was wintertime, we did just one day without food. But then, you know, we had people visiting us to give us some food during that three-time camping, you know, alone up in the mountains and on our skis. But I realized he wasn't fulfilled, and I began to ask during those 3 days, you know, well, what does it mean to be whole, or what is a true way of life that we can find happiness? And I think that was the beginning of my real search. And
In the Rockies, in the snow, in the middle of the winter.
That's right. That I was loving. I enjoyed every minute of it. And it really helped me to, that time helped me to recognize that I wanted to find a true way of life. And that started me on a quest. And it was during the early 70s. And I hitchhiked the rest of the way after that to California. I was planning to visit some friends and my sister who lived in Los Angeles. And in the rides that I got picked up by a Mormon and had a really good conversation. I got, by a fundamentalist Christian and had numerous conversations with people of various faiths. And I found it interesting that I was getting, I recognized that on some spiritual level, I was getting exposed to different possibilities. Mm-hmm. And by the time I reached Berkeley, California, I'd had a number of experiences. And in Berkeley, I ended up meeting the Unification Church and had really profound experiences and developed a relationship there that was the beginning of the next 40 years of my life. So meeting and listening to the ideas of Reverend Moon had a strong impact upon who I am today.
Right. And the way you describe, we're going to get back to that, but the way you describe that trip, one of my seminary professors described the scriptures of the Hebrew or Greek, Christian or Jewish texts as a pilgrim in search of an interpreter. And as a hitchhiker, you're a pilgrim in search of an interpreter to take you to your next destination. And I haven't hitchhiked much because I came of age when that was much more difficult to do. But it has had those qualities to me, and oftentimes car rides open people up in a way that other kinds of face-to-face conversations don't.
Yeah, I think that's true.
And so it's a beautiful opening. So by the time you arrived at Berkeley, you were open, and you arrived in an environment that was open to you. How did you engage? What was the way in which you learned or found? How did you know that you were finding something of value?
Some ideas just resonate, and in a certain way, because the teaching is based upon Judeo-Christianity, then it was familiar in lots of ways. It's, an interpretation of the Bible, basically. Mm-hmm. And so it was familiar, and I felt like I was returning to some of those ideas because I had been agnostic and, for several years in there. And so I felt like I was kind of coming back to that, to God, and that, and I think that's what religion is meant to be, is to be a bridge back to, it's a way to find God. That appealed to me, but also the fact that there were a lot of Eastern ideas mixed in, and I was, as most of our culture at that point was starting to be very interested in the East. And it was just kind of the beginning of that interest. And so that intrigued me because I had a longing to understand other cultures and to, to travel and to see things from different perspectives and from, So I think it was both of those things, both the familiar and also the new aspect. And there was a real understanding that there are many paths to God in the teaching, that there are many paths to God. And I saw this as one that I might fit into.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And While you were talking, there was a title, Meeting Jesus Again for the First Time, of a book that came out back maybe 20 years ago. Mm. And it was an effort to help people to discover what they had overlooked or overassumed. And kind of when you go through that adolescent, you know, striking out on your own and demanding that the world kind of conform to what you're looking for, and then you begin to look a little more aggressively and a little more openly, so that the world provides whatever you find in it. So I'm just very struck by how you went halfway across the country to find home.
Yes, I did.
Yeah. So how has that impacted the way in which you have gone about your career, your marriage, your children? How has that shaped how's that organized or structured? The word religion means to religament, to bind together again, to put together the whole thing when it falls apart. And, you know, and that's, and how has it helped you put things together?
I had led a very exciting 7 or 8, 10 years of life in the church as a full-time missionary, basically.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And so that was, I traveled a lot and did a lot of things, learned so much and had so many amazing relationships with, developed deep friends.
And the travel accelerated.
Yes. Yeah, for a while. And then I went to seminary. We are in New York, upstate New York, and on the Hudson River in Barrytown. And that was such a deepening experience. Of again, understanding kind of the history, and the seminary was very unique in that we had teachers from all different faiths that were teaching at the seminary. We had rabbis and the Christian ministers, and we had you know, some of the Unification faith too. But it was a real live mix of different backgrounds that was very stimulating to me.
Right.
And that's where I met my husband. I didn't know that at the time, of course, but we were matched by Reverend Moon in 1979. Is that right?
I think 79, so. Yeah.
In 1979. Uh-huh. And you know, the famous mass marriages. We were married and blessed in marriage in Madison Square Garden, along with over 2,000 other couples.
And for many years, that was an annual, I think, or maybe even more than annual.
They still happen on an annual basis, and maybe not, you know, some larger, some smaller, but yeah, it's still.
So what was it like for you? Well, or let's take a little music break, and then and then we'll, what should we play next musically? What should we play from?
Well, since we're talking about faith, let's play Finlandia.
Okay. And here we go.
This is my song. Oh,
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest on this hour is Anne Hoover. So, Anne, you mentioned that you were a missionary for several years, and then you went to seminary. Did that happen before? Seminary happened after your service in missions, and yes. Then you were matched by the Reverend Moon to your husband. That is so contrary to American experience, and particularly of those kind of defiant late 60s and 70s days where we're all out to kind of form our own relationships and communities. What was it that you saw in the teachings or in the person or in the practice that made it possible for you to consent and choose to go in that path and finding a partner?
Faith in God, and that God was working through the Reverend Moon, mm-hmm. to find the right partner for me.
Right.
And that also in the teaching, and as we were being mentored as we went into these relationships, is that love comes from giving and from receiving, and through that we can create love.
That you practice and that your we way practice. Into the relationship.
Exactly, yes. And through loving, then you develop the bonds. And so in many cases, Reverend Moon matched people who were coming from very, very different backgrounds, mm-hmm. different races, different nationalities. The theme of the marriage blessings were always world peace through ideal families. So by putting people who may come from ancestors, might have come from Germany and the United States, say, you know, or enemy nations.
Right, enemy peoples on some level.
Yes, then by bringing love into that relationship, then we can create a society of people that understand one another, mm-hmm. rather than are opposed and can't understand.
Right. And some people say the increase in marriages across cultural or racial backgrounds is having an implicit impact on our culture in the same sort of way, by making us more aware.
And this was when very little of that was happening.
So.
In many ways, I feel like he started a trend.
Right. And you use the word faith, and faith is faith has a couple of connotations. One is kind of blind acceptance and obedience, which kind of plays to the moon brainwashing rhetoric that has been so negative around religion. But faith is also a quality, a stance of trust and hope in the world, and it's when you the teachings made it possible for you to have a stance of trust and hope, mm-hmm. but also I assume you had been in other relationships earlier in your life that you had chosen yourself. Was there something that seemed better or different or like it was worth trying?
Well, I found that I was attracted to my husband. Mm-hmm. I was attracted to Chad, nonetheless, even though
sure.
I was put in that relationship.
Right.
And I think he had to work harder. but I think that just the belief that this person is good for me and that I can learn and that he's in the position of... we often say, well, he's your second Messiah. He's you know, your partner is the person who you're going to learn the most from.
Right. He's the one whom you're going to work out your salvation.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, you know, in that regard, you have to be grateful.
Right.
And you need to recognize that every time you have a disagreement or a misunderstanding or something, that, mm-hmm. that you need to grow and learn and love through that. And
right, and I, one of the things that I have been meditating on is, if we accept what we're given, And this is where the kind of the big emphasis now on gratitude and finding gratitude practices. It's easier, I think, to be grateful for things that we have been given that we did not so aggressively conspire or orchestrate to happen. Because when we accept that we're out of control, it kind of allows us to play and engage in ways that allows us to try to be more creative and more searching within ourselves, because we didn't have something in mind to get to because it was given to us.
Right. I think that's true. And I found, you know, I found that I feel like God was very good to me.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, Chad and I have a lot of things that overlap that are more similar. I mean, we came from similar backgrounds, both Protestant American, you know, kind of middle of the road relationships. So
middle class, middle of the road,
yes,
America.
Yes. Yeah. So in that we had a lot in common. He's an artist. He's an architect, and I've always been appreciative of the arts, and so that was very attractive to me, that part of his life. Mm-hmm. And yet, you know, there are obviously going to be lots of things that we're worlds apart, and that's where we've had to grow and change, each of us, in order to really become a solid couple.
Well, and to become a self in a relationship with an other, where you're both strong individuals and your relationship is strong.
Yes.
I mean, there are three entities there in some ways, which is, there's the each individual and the relationship, the combination.
Mm-hmm. And God in the center of all.
Right.
Of that.
Well, yeah. And through, I mean,
and then children.
Through it all. And then you've got five children.
Yeah.
I'm just, so, as you have deepened in your understanding of this practice of becoming a partner to your husband, and becoming a person of God, I think, because as you had said, the two are parallel processes, and one of the things that we struggle with, I think, as people, how we become people, is not so much about what we objectively learn about the world, but how we choose to take things into our lives and process them. You know what I'm saying? It's not there's some objective standard out there, but there's a way that I come to know you, a way that I come. And when you chose to be coupled in this pattern, you chose a path of discovery.
Yes.
Rather than saying, this is what I'm out to look for. And mm-hmm. when we want to make it like an objective, rational decision, and so much of our world issues are that people want to decide what will happen rather than to live into what's possible, we tie ourselves up into knots. And so let me do the station ID, and you can think about what we'll play next. And you're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca. I'm Eric Clay, the host. This is the Made of Clay Report, and our guest on this hour is Ann Hoover. So what should we play next?
Let's play the Appalachian Waltz.
Okay, here we go.
Thank you.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest is Anne Hoover. So, Anne, how has your faith and your practice in the Unification Church, how has it kind of strengthened and maybe or taken you to higher places or to lower places? How has it evolved over time or varied through time, and how have you learned to hold it in yourself?
That's a big question too, but I think that, you know, we're the goal is always to grow through every experience that you have.
Sure.
I think that I got through marriage and starting a family, I got really tied up in taking care of children and just like being the day-to-day reality.
Sure.
And I think that through that, we certainly strive to, you know, raise our children in the faith, and we would have wonderful times at summer camp with the kids, mm-hmm. and those are some of the highlights of time when we could be with some of our friends from within the church,
right.
Feel really free to be ourselves in that environment, and of course for me it was in nature too,
and when you're with others, then all of those demands around children are shared across many layers.
Which is always helpful.
The tapestry of relationships relieves the stress on any one thread.
Yeah. Exactly. And of course I really treasure my relationship with my children, and I think that they know that their mommy loves them.
Right.
And but it was hard work, and it's very difficult.
And how did the work detract you?
Well, I think that I, in a way, got depressed with the responsibility of taking care of these precious people, and I think I also got kind of caught up in my faith and wanting to impose it on my children rather than really guiding them in a softer way, and I think that I recognize it as being maybe not the best way to do it now, but the time I thought it was, you know, because I cared so much about what they, you know, their future.
And, right. And you had something of such value, you wanted them to have it in the same way.
Exactly. But
and that's a problem for all parents, regardless of background.
I think so. Yeah. And I recognize that too. You know, but at the moment, at the time when it might have been important for me to behave in a different way, or to love in a different way, actually, to give my love in a different way, I was trying to control it instead of letting them be free to receive it, and I regret that.
Right.
But I think, you know, they're all turning out to be beautiful individuals, and you know,
it is a tough thing to know the balance of when to care and try to control, and when to not care in that way and let things emerge.
Yes.
But people have to, for something to be of faith, which is the irony, faith is a stance of trust and hope, but anything done out of coercion or control is not of faith.
Exactly.
And we fail to remember that. And most of I would say, the kind of the spiritual analysis of our malaise as a nation is that we want to use control and coercion to govern with, and yet we can never keep faith with each other, which was what would make equality be possible. And
trust is so essential in every form of relationship.
Right.
And in the government, I think that's really true.
And hope that in this trust we will discover what will work, or something that will make it possible for us all to move forward.
Yes.
So how did you become aware with yourself that you, and what did you do to start letting go?
I think that, you know, we get pushed into a position, I think, so that we recognize that.
By our choices, we've gotten ourselves into a corner. Yes. Other people neatly describe where we are.
And so I got myself into that corner,
right.
I think, by just having too much, you know, taking on too much responsibility, perhaps, on myself, taking and not recognizing that I need to share that more. I need to let go and let people make their own choices and their own decisions. Mm-hmm. And I need to let myself relax.
Right.
And take care of my... I actually became sick. I made myself sick.
Right, right.
And so I've been working on that healing a lot more, and have been working more on loving myself and recognizing that I have value in myself too, that I need to take care of.
And with respect to your love of nature, and to a local poet now long deceased, Archie Ammons, had a poem for this situation. And he was a poet of nature and of science. Mm-hmm. And the burdens of the world lighten the world. The burdens of the world on my back lighten the world not a whit, while removing them reduces greatly my specific gravity.
Indeed.
And the unburdening that allows us to laugh and to relax and to engage in play rather than drudgery.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I certainly needed to do that in my life at various points.
I need to do it throughout the day.
Yes. And you speak of nature again. One of my favorite things is just to go for a walk, or especially to get out into the woods or by the streams and waterfalls. And that really helps me to reconnect and to recenter and to feel the love and the appreciation for everything around me.
Right, right. And you're actually walking right into the next set of questions for the show, which is about self-care. You know, you began the show with a comment on your father showing you the rainbow in the cornfield across from your house. And then we went to being 3 days by yourself in a snowstorm, or in the winter in the Rockies, trying to figure out what a meaningful or worthwhile life would look like. And now to walking in nature as your kids are grown and you have grandkids and re-centering yourself. So that's a strong piece of what... And the question is, what do you do to restore yourself physically, emotionally, and intellectually throughout the day, daily, weekly, monthly, yearly? And how do you know you need to do it?
Well, my body tells me.
Your body. Yes. Yep, yep.
And... I've started meditating a lot more, and that's been very, very helpful to me. And some of that meditation is in the form of tapping, which I've found to be very useful, because physical.
Yeah, and so describe what is meditation that's tapping?
Tapping is physically going through different parts of your body, kind of chakras, and while you're actually tapping on that part
of the body,
you're making affirmations and
relevant to that chakra,
helping you to kind of focus in the right direction, and 'cause what we believe, the way we're thinking, you know, so many times we develop bad habits of negative thinking or negative way of approaching things. So by changing, we can change that.
Right, right.
And that's what I'm attempting to do through that.
Right. So if you have a way of thinking about something which kind of puts it in a box but makes it very hard to be creative or open to the world, then you've tried to find a way to let that go and be open.
And so letting go, of course, is a big one. Mm-hmm, it's just trying to recognize that you know, the anxieties and the fears and all of those things that only close us up make us fear, then we have to open that up to, you know, let go of that in order to let love come in and let love be the focus rather than anything negative.
Right, right. And in this process of reframing the intellectual words, you're addressing the emotion, but you're also freeing the body, because fear invokes attention. You know, yes. Panic invokes attention. Anxiety invokes attention. But when we find a way to unlock it, it can relax, and that energy can be expressed in more productive ways.
And the energy can flow in our bodies right. in a yes. more positive
doesn't
way.
Doesn't get stuck.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's the kind of internal axis. What works externally for your connecting to other people? What do you do kind of emotionally in the relational realm to kind of take care of yourself?
Well, the most important relationship at this point is one with my husband.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And we're trying to travel some more, and we're even though I've retired from Cornell and my work in study abroad there, I'm now working with vacation rentals. And so Chad and I really work well together because he's the architect and kind of loves the building part, and I love the garden part, but we help each other with both. And we're both interested in making it a beautiful place for people to be,
right.
and so aesthetically it's a good experience, and we've had a lot of fun mm-hmm. doing that, and I think that's a really positive thing. Getting him out on a bicycle now and again, or doing things together, and we're going to visit one of our daughters who's been teaching in Norway this past year, so we'll be going there soon to visit her for a couple of weeks, and I'm looking forward to just a vacation and, mm-hmm. and being away and spending time with her.
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned vacation rentals. My partner and I maintain a vacation rental effort from May through end of October, and it has actually allowed us to work together and be together in really, really in ways that we wouldn't be together if we weren't having a little business. I grew mm-hmm. up on a family farm, so uh-huh. to me, this is like our little family farm, and it provides a nice little income stream, and we mm-hmm. can do it while we do other things, and it's a lovely.
Yeah. Well, it's been really wonderful for us because it hasn't replaced my income from Cornell, but it is a way that we can continue to have that income.
Yeah, and it's a way to discover each other.
Yes,
in a just a completely different light.
It's been like I said, it's just been fun,
you're doing more by way of traveling.
Yes. With children spread out all over the world at the moment, it's a lot of fun to going to Europe, and then I have a sister in Idaho that I hope to visit, mm-hmm, and I have mm-hmm. a brother in Hawaii that I hope to visit, and and then my children live in Virginia or Maryland and near New York City and. Mm-hmm. Texas, so
wow, all over the map.
All over the map. Yeah. So we have lots of places to go.
Sure, sure, sure. So, so when did you learn that? Or I mean, this is really a process over the course of your life. How did you become aware that your self-care is kind of your task? You discovered yourself
too
questioning.
Recently.
But I would say you discovered this question in the mountains.
That's true.
You know, mm-hmm. and that is an act of self-care. You wouldn't necessarily frame it that way, but mm-hmm. you say too recently. But what may have helped it make it possible that you can actually do now what you couldn't do before? Because of what you've done before.
I think being open to lots of different mm-hmm. Ideas mm-hmm. and recognizing that there are many paths.
Sure.
Again,
I mean, and you talk about the chakras, and there are Christians for whom that is not acceptable language because they haven't found a way to integrate that practice with their understanding of who they are.
And maybe that again came through my this integration of East and West, and that that I have become more familiar with some of those, and the whole idea of meditation for a long time was not very easily accepted in the West.
And we had forgotten the practices, like the old men in my community where I grew up, the men born in the 1880s and 90s would sit out on the benches in town in the 1960s with their fingers all touching each other and their feet either crossed or straight and their hands in their lap. And that's a traditional meditation posture. And they all sat that way. They were meditating on the street. And I remember that vision that I'd seen over and over again as a kid a few years ago. And I said, oh my God, they were doing this.
Interesting.
And nobody would have ever labeled it that because nobody thought about labeling it.
That's probably true. Yeah. And anyway, I'm really grateful to that I can be open to those things, probably because of the different experiences that I've had. And that recognizing that, you know, every individual is a unique being, and and that we relate in various different ways, and so not one path is going to work for everybody, but we can still learn from those different various paths, and we can grow through that understanding and by knowledge intellectually, and then that touches us someplace emotionally as well, and so kind of bringing those together is.
Right. And you, I think for lots of outsiders, the when you just say the name Unification Church, people project mostly falsely cult and that it's closed and not that it fosters openness. But one of the ironies about being in part of an intentional community or intentional group or organization is that you choose a discipline.
Yes, that's very much part of it.
And but you also choose how to change the discipline or how to adjust your understanding of the discipline so it continues to have positive effects on your life.
Yes. And yeah, nobody's going to be able to agree with everything that somebody else tells you, or in a faith, you sometimes have to grow into it or into understanding it more deeply, or aspects of it. If it has room in it to understand and interpret, then that makes it more valid, in my view.
It makes it more useful
and useful.
So valid is in that sense is the act of validating it. Yeah.
So, through, for instance, there's a lot of chaos in the unification movement right now, because after Reverend Moon's passing, then there are splinter groups and all sorts of things that I don't agree with.
And this happens.
This happens in all new religious movements, in all religious movements, but in this one happens to be a new religious movement that's happening right now. And of course, there are many things I'm maybe upset by or
worried about.
Yes, but I think the most essential thing is what I choose to take from the teachings, and I find the teachings is something that have been useful to me in the last 40 some years, and that I want to carry on using in my life. And I think it's those things, those parts of the faith that I would choose to share with other people, or to hope that other people could grow from too.
Right. So. And this is what you found is important.
Yes.
We don't often give each other the occasion to have conversations like this. Once when I was helping lead a local congregation, we asked people to invite in their friends of other faiths, other traditions, and they had three questions. How does your faith make a difference in your life? What do other people need to know about your practices in order to be respectful of you? And what is the hardest part for you to do, to live in the way that you've come to understand is faithful? And when you put those three questions out, it levels the playing field.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody can talk to these things, and it allows us to draw on the strength of our experience rather than judge each other by whether we have the right experience or not, or the right language or not.
Excellent.
How do you hope to relate, given what you've learned with your children and yourself in these mm-hmm. years, as the movement has kind of exploded in this moment mm-hmm. in history, how do you hope to make these things available to your grandchildren?
My Chad and I are actually working on a project that is focused around unification thought, mm-hmm. which is more of the philosophical understanding
sure.
of the teachings. And so we're, through our work on campus, and we're particularly thinking about college age,
sure.
But we're trying to help develop the ideas of unification thought, to about relationship and about the idea of becoming one with God, or mm-hmm. developing our relationship with God and as an individual, and then our relationships within the family and expanding to the society. How do we relate? Mm-hmm. So those developing those relationships focused on unification teachings.
So that there's a strong coherence across all of those dimensions.
And then, understanding about education and mm-hmm. what education means and how the values that can be brought to education and at what levels, and just trying to develop some of those ideas.
And it sounds like you are trying in a very small way without engaging in the larger conflicts to foster the faith moving forward.
Yes, I think so.
Yeah, and that's given where you are in life, that's the task, is to pass it on, or to pass something on where others can discover what's of value and take it and make it for the next time around.
Nicely said.
And it almost sounds like it would be like a unification version of like Hillel or some kind of.
We have a group on campus called CARP, uh-huh. which is not just of our faith, but we've often had Muslims and
sure.
other Christians, friends of the students who are on campus, be a part of that, and it's more of sharing of values
mm-hmm,
rather
mm-hmm.
than of exact teachings and
right.
or prescribed way of life. So it's an attempt to do a lot more interfaith
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
exploration and trying to guide young people in developing the values that can lead to a stronger society.
Right, right. And to also cultivate the core leaders who have more of the unification rooting.
Yes.
I would imagine in relationships that are outside.
Yeah. To some extent, yes.
Yeah, yeah. And it's been wonderful to get to know you.
Thank you. It's been fun.
Good. What should we close with?
Let's see. How about This Is My Father's World?
Okay. Here we go. Thank you.
This is my father's world, and to my listening ears, all nature sings and round me rings the music of the spheres. This is my